Welcome to Opening the Door Podcast. Join me as we unlock the door to our psychic, intuitive, and mediumship abilities. Come along as we explore how to get in touch with our intuition, expand our mediumship, and open plenty of other doors to every aspect of spirituality, consciousness, and magic along the way. Hey, key holders. Today you'll hear a conversation I had with Brittany about altar building in general, but also indoor and outdoor altar building. I thought it would be fun to do a cool, fun, sort of earthy altar building episode for the beginning of spring. You have heard Brittany before on the podcast on a few episodes, witchy spring cleaning last year, and also we did a fun sort of history of witchcraft and Halloween episode within the first season of the podcast, which was really fun. Before we get into this episode, just a reminder that I have a new mini reading option only available for the month of April 2024 to be exact. It's called Spring Cleaning. This is a psychic reading where I'll tap into your energy and receive what your soul is ready to let go of, what blockages or ways of thinking you're ready to shed, and also what magic and energies and greatness and goodness your soul is ready to invite in for the spring. You can find that in the link in bio and also Brittany's socials in the link in bio as well. Enjoy the episode and remember, don't be afraid to open your door. Today, we're welcoming back Brittany to Opening the Door. You heard from Brittany in episode 11 about history of witchcraft and Halloween, and also in, I forget what the episode number is, but the witchy spring cleaning episode. Brittany is a witch who loves teaching and helping others find their paths and passions. She started in the kitchen witchcraft, Italian folk magic, and plant-based magics, but now just calls herself eclectic. Her goal is to form a community interested in self-work, knowledge, caring for nature, and enjoying a little humor and science along the way. Today, we are going to be discussing altar building in general and also sort of getting into outdoor altar building, which I'm excited to talk about as when this episode airs, spring will sort of be upon us. So Brittany, welcome back to Opening the Door.
Hey girl, what's up?
So excited to have you back on. I feel like you're kind of our resident witch here these days, which I just love.
Oh my gosh, I'm honored. Thank you.
We love having you. We love your energy. So I wanted to start just asking to get some basics because I don't think altar building is something that we've almost never touched on the podcast. So first, I'm wondering if you can sort of define what an altar is for us and like what are their uses?
Sure. So altars are used for a whole bunch of different things. So I think first and foremost, altars are kind of just the sacred place and people use them for a whole bunch of various things. So they can use them to perform workings at. They can use it as just a sacred space to honor themselves, to honor any deities they work with. They can build them seasonally. They can build them. A lot of Wiccans tend to build them for all of the Sabbats. So they'll build like 8 altars just for all these different things, which is really incredible. I applaud the commitment. And they're just, I would say, at its heart, just a sacred space for anything that you wish to honor, whether that be yourself, your family, your passed on relatives, just anything. I mean, it's super fun. It's just also kind of fun to have a space to decorate and be pretty.
Yeah. I don't have an altar space, but I feel like it's something that's coming into my awareness, and I feel like I would love to have just like a little tiny space for like I don't really know what, but I love the idea of just a little sacred space, even if it's just sort of for yourself. I also think that the word altar, if you grew up in, and I know you did, we talked about it in I think your first episode that you were on, but like if you grow up in sort of religious communities, altars are like the place where the Bible or the word, like whatever you call it, sits. And I think it's kind of cool to do a little bit of a reclaiming of that space and that word in a witchy way. So very cool.
Hey, yeah. I mean, altars in general are just, I think when people think of them, they think of them as these huge, like elaborate, almost temple-like spaces. But the truth is, I'd say like for 80% of witches or anyone that wants to build an altar in general, it's I would say no bigger than a textbook because we have to be realistic about home space, right? Not everyone's going to build a dining room table size altar. So they can be as elaborate or as easy as you want, and it's still just as special because you built it.
So cool. Are there any, and it's so funny, I'm going to use this word because it's like so associated with organized religion, but are there any cardinal rules of making an altar? Like, are there any rules that you do not break? Are there any sort of basic rules that people should follow as they start building?
Yeah, so some people will tell you that there's like a top 10 list of ways to build an altar, right? But that's not my vibe. I just kind of believe that your altar should feel like you. And if it doesn't feel like you, why are you building it? You know, like I don't believe that altars have to come with rules. Now, am I going to say like go urinate on your altar? No. It's just like you treat it with respect the way you would treat yourself with respect, the way you would treat anyone else if you've dedicated it to someone, treat it the way that you would want to treat that person with respect. And beyond that, it's your practice, it's your rules. So anything goes as long as you're cool with it.
Cool. I like that. What do you, okay, so can you take me through like your altar process or however you sort of, now that we have these sort of these basics, and I'm sure we'll get lots of tips along the way of this as well, but do you want to take me through your altar process and then anything beyond that that you want to chat through?
Yeah, sure. So when I build an altar, the very first thing I think about is who am I building it for? And if I'm building it for myself, I want it to feel like me. So I think about what all my favorite things are. So for me, a non-negotiable on an altar is flowers. I need flowers, just beautiful, pretty things to smell and look at. And then next, I'm thinking like, okay, what is going to draw me into the space? What is something that's appealing that's going to lure me in? So I want incense. I want pretty sparkly things to look at. I want candles. I want my favorite tarot decks. Some people are really big fans of altar cloths, which you can like consecrate specifically for your altar. You can make it special. You can dedicate it specifically. And a lot of people like the altar cloths because you can fold them up and then kind of take them anywhere. So it's kind of like you don't have to pick up your whole bookshelf and move your altar, right? You can just take the little cloth and move your altar wherever you need to around the house. But for me, usually what I have on my altar is some incense, some flowers, whatever book I'm reading at the moment. And then usually I'll make like an herbal blend for whatever I'm enjoying at the time. So when I sit down next to my altar, I have a great cup of tea to enjoy.
Ooh, cool. I love it. So if somebody's building an altar for themselves, what, I don't know, I guess the question is like, what activities do you do at an altar? I don't know if that's the right question to ask. So point me in the right direction.
Anything at an altar is the thing. So, a lot of people use their altar space specifically for doing their workings. So, they'll build their altar to themselves and then they will do anything witchy that they want to do at that altar. So, say you're making a manifestation oil, that's the place that they're going to do that working because they've already got it cleared out and built and it's already like sacred feeling to them. So an altar to me kind of usually ends up reflecting your mindset towards your practice. So it's kind of like when someone tells you like your bedroom reflects your mind, right? I think your altar reflects your mind. So whatever you're vibing with at the moment is kind of what your altar is going to look like at the end of the day. And I would say the other things that people do at them, they dedicate. So if they're working with anyone in particular, or if they're honoring family members, they'll put pictures up for them, they'll light candles for them. Some people will read their passed on loved ones' stories or just talk to them about their day. If you are interested in like any new knowledge, some people will take a chair and like put it up next to their altar and read that. So they're kind of in that sacred space mindset vibe, you know, while they're reading it. So they kind of get a feel, they're taking the time, and it feels more intentional, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So anything that you would like to make more intentional, you just do alongside or at your altar.
Unfortunately, My room has a lot of clothes on the floor. So hopefully I would be able to treat an altar a little bit better than that.
We all care. There's no shame in that. It's fine.
I have three jackets I could think of right now on my floor, but that's because I was trying jackets on this weekend. And I just as a thought, we're recording this on a Monday, okay? So the weekend is not far away. I'll pick them
Right.
up right after we're done this.
And that's what I tell people, because I think that's what I was saying earlier is like, I think people have this idea that your temple, or I mean, that your altar needs to be this like clinically clean temple type space, right? But your altar is just you. So something that I like to do with it as well is, if my altar is getting dirty, how is my mental health at the minute? Like, you can use it as a really great way to kind of look at yourself, check in, and be like, hey, like, I wouldn't usually let my altar get super dirty. Do I need to take care of me first? Because at the end of the day, your altar is just stuff. You are the special thing. You have built the altar. You have made the altar. So if you're not taking care of you, like, your altar comes last. You take care of you first. And so tell people, you don't need to keep your altar spotless. You don't need to keep it the way a church would keep their chapel. You just need to be okay with whatever cleaning regimen you've got going on. Whenever you cleanse, cleanse your altar. You know, if that's once a year, great. If that's every week, great.
Very important. And I think it's interesting the thought of using it as sort of a barometer for your own maybe mental health or like mental clutter in general. Like I think that's a cool way to sort of measure it and also use it as a check-in point with yourself too. So we love a mental health moment. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I feel like the altars, whether you're building them like for you or whether you're building them for someone else, I feel like people get so caught up in, if they've built them for someone else, they're worried that that other person is going to be mad at them if they don't maintain it meticulously. But your loved ones are your loved ones, you know, your deities are your deities, and they give you the same understanding that anyone else would give you. If you would look at someone else and be like, it's fine, like, I'm not coming here to lick your altar, give it the white glove test, like, give yourself that same grace.
Yeah. So, what are some of your favorite altar building materials?
Ooh, number one, roses. Me and Rose, that's my number one, that's my girl. So usually you'll find some sort of rose base, anything at my altar, whether it's rose spray, whether it's petals, whether it's a bouquet. If you're hanging with me, you're hanging with roses. You'll usually find a candle, whether that's electronic or fire-based, like one you can actually light. And I feel like that's another thing that people kind of panic about, is they not everyone can light a physical candle in their space, right? Like, there's a million billion rules that rental companies, or maybe you have like a toddler running around the house that you don't want to knock over your candle. You don't have to have physical fire. You can just have a little LED candle, and it's still cool because you did it, because you took the time to put it there.
Cool.
And yeah, usually I'll keep a candle there, whether that's LED or an actual physical candle, it doesn't matter to me. And then I'd say I usually actually, well, yeah, I guess it still counts as rose because I clean with rose water. So you'll almost always find a bottle of rose water to like clear it off with. And then if it's my altar just for me, you're gonna find an array of like books or some of my favorite crystals. Like, it's where I keep all my Moldavite because I'm a tektite girl at heart. I love a good transformation. And so
Me
that's where I
too. Very cool.
Yeah, see? Yeah, I'm glad that you can appreciate a tektite because a lot of people are freaked out by them.
If I make an altar, I think it's going to be filled with trinkets. Like, I'm a trinket girl at my core. I love, like, if I go to the thrift store, you cannot let me go to the glassware section because I will find something to take home. I just love old glass, old trinkets, like any little thing. Any little pretty shiny thing, you know? So mine's probably going to be filled with trinkets and dried flowers.
I'm going to take you there and we're going to get all the trinkets. Listen, if you want trinkets at your altar, you're going to put trinkets at your altar. That's what you should have there. You know, sometimes I'll put a little candy dish out full of like Werther's Originals because I'm 90 at heart. Just like enjoy a little caramel moment while I study astrology or something like that. And it's fun.
I love it. I love that. Do you, I don't know. So how, where do you want to go here? Do you want to talk about outdoor altar stuff? Or do you feel like there's any basics that we sort of need to cover first before we get there?
You know what? Let's talk about, we can go to the outdoor because it's going to factor. We're kind of going to go indoor outdoor for a minute. We can go straight outdoor, but we should talk about like altar size in general.
Yeah. Let's talk about altar size. First question, does it matter?
I think it's the way you use it, Haley. No, I don't think it does matter. And yeah, like we were saying, I think the first thought that comes to mind is this huge, grand, like, look how much effort I put into you, almost this people-pleasing mentality, where it's like, oh my gosh, I have to make the biggest, grandest, best thing, or I didn't even try, and it basically doesn't count. But that's just not the truth. Your altar can be a mason jar. It can be filled with all your favorite trinkets for you. It can be your trinkets that you've brought home from Goodwill. You find an ice cream dish you love. You put some dried flowers in there, like you said, maybe toss in a little Werther original too for a treat. And that's your altar, because the size doesn't matter. It's definitely how meaningful it is to you. And I've seen altars that, I mean, make your jaw drop, right? And then I've seen other ones that are a bowl filled with salt with some coins in them and some meaningful things to them, and it was just as meaningful. So never feel like your altar isn't good enough or isn't valid enough, because at the end of the day, you made it, and that's what makes it special.
I'm just thinking of this. So if somebody's sort of feeling inspired to get started and make their own, and obviously we're going to get into outdoor altar making in a minute, but is there anything you need to do to prep your space that you're going to be building on?
I would say first and foremost, clean it. You know, I think cleaning is just so underrated. Like we talked about in the spring cleaning episode. I think as long as your space is clean, and it doesn't really matter what you clean it with, as long as you're cleaning it, because when you're building something, you don't want to build it on a space that you don't feel is special. So it doesn't mean it has to physically look clean, but you probably should, you know, wipe it with a wet rag or something. Let's call it a day. But that's also part of the benefit of an altar cloth. Is if you don't have the ability to clean something, say you're out and about and you want to build like an on-the-fly altar, you can bring your cloth with you, you know, put some sticks and stones on it, whatever you feel like, and then bam, instant altar. You know, it's like ramen, the ramen of the altar world.
Okay, so should we get into sort of the outdoor aspect? We've got spring coming up, showing her little buds or little flowers starting here. So yeah, what about, what's tell us a little bit more about, I guess, outdoor altar building, anything that we need to know, why we should or shouldn't do it, you know, all that, all the good stuff.
Yeah, outdoor altars are my very, very favorite, because number one, plants, right? We a reason for plants is reason enough for me. So I think most people, when they think of an altar, they're thinking of indoor, but historically, altars were almost always outdoors. So, I mean, the temples were outdoors. They had like huge breezeways where you would be able to experience the elements alongside of whatever you were feeling. So, an outdoor altar is, I think, number one in my book. If I have to pick, I'm always going to pick an outdoor altar, because any chance to reconnect with the earth and just like getting to feel the dirt under your fingernails while you're building, or you catch a breeze of like the scent of your neighbor's jasmine, it's going to make that feel more meaningful for you. And so an outdoor altar, again, I think the number one problem is people feel like it has to be elaborate, right? So, but most often, an outdoor altar is meant to be really temporary. So it can be a space that you return to over and over again. Like maybe you're on a walk and you see a really cool tree and you return to that tree over and over again. And maybe you tie a ribbon to it so you know that that's your special tree and you don't forget about it. Maybe you find a really cool stump Maybe you find something next to a lake bed that you love. And honestly, if you find a really cool hill outside in a park where you're like, there's a sidewalk next to it and a million billion people pass it every day, that's still fine. And the outdoor altar is just something I don't think you can replicate indoors. And I mean, obviously, aside from the obvious, right? But it's just a feeling of reconnection that I haven't been able to replicate with an indoor altar. So most often, if people want to build an outdoor altar, what I'll tell them to do is stack a couple of rocks next to a place that they really love, that makes them feel relaxed. And it doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to be this outstandingly scenic, breathtaking view. If you feel really cool next to the old ass tree in your yard that, I mean, has definitely seen better days, then great. That's the spot for you.
Okay, very cool. Because when we were sort of discussing this episode, as I was thinking about it, and I'm somebody who doesn't have any of their own outdoor space, like I don't have a yard. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if this will apply to people who maybe are like living like more city or even suburban, who don't have like a backyard to spread out into and build. So I love the idea of it, like it doesn't have to be your owned space, really. So
yeah. It's kind of like trying to claim the entire earth, right? Like, I can't claim a blade of grass in my front yard if someone else wants to come hang out on it. So it definitely, don't get me wrong, it's easier, like, in your own backyard, right? But go out to a park, sit in nature for a bit, build an altar, be like, hey, I felt really special and I felt really called to this space. Stack a couple rocks. Put a few twigs in the shape of a pentagram. Leave it there for the next scared hiker. It'll be great. And just sit with it, because you can just like sit and meditate there for a bit. But for someone who doesn't have their own outdoor space, if you have like a front porch or something, you can create an altar with a potted, like a container garden. So you can get a little pot, doesn't matter how big or small, plant a plant in it that you love, that, you know, is going to live in your climate, and just dedicate it to whoever you want, whether it's you, whether it's your family, your deities, anyone, and that's your space. I think it's just nice to be able to kind of sit with something living and enjoy that sacred time.
Yeah, absolutely. So if somebody's has an indoor altar already and they're like, okay, I'm building an outdoor altar when it's warm enough where I live. Or if you like the cold, I guess you can build one in the snow. That's not for me, but it might be for somebody.
Like an igloo altar. I love that.
Yeah. Like an icicle altar. You can like pluck down a bunch of icicles from your gutters and like put them upright so they look like spikes. Like that could be pretty cool.
That'd be so much fun. You make a little snowman to live in front of it.
It would be like an ice queen vibey thing. That's not my thing, but if you're an ice queen, I invite you. I just want to mention that one time when it was snowy, I was walking and somebody had built in their front yard the funniest little scene of like a bunch of snowmen, like little tiny snowmen around one tree, and then they like spiked up a little snowman to the tree, and they all looked like they were like doing a little snowman sacrifice, and it just cracked me up so much.
Watch like someone's sacrificial altar right there.
It was incredible. I was like, I love that person.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was very cool. Wow, I forget. I think I was gonna ask you a question, but I got myself so off topic that I don't remember what it was.
You know what? That's life. That's fine. But we can talk about typical materials for the outdoor altar.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I would say the very first thing to start with is plants. if you've got them, you know, scatter some seeds there, something that you know will grow in the area. If you can't do that, just clear a little area for you, like clear out the sticks and stones so you have a nice sitting area, and then reform them in cute little piles, whatever feels good to you. I would say it's really intuitive when you're building an outdoor altar. More often than not, I would say people usually find a tree. So they find a tree kind of anywhere that's really significant to them. And then they just continually return to that tree. And some people will like carve their initials into it, which I know is kind of like, not everyone wants to carve into the tree, which is cool. But some people really do. And I'm not here to tell you how to run your practice, you know? So you do you, but some people will leave offerings at the tree. Some people will like leave little meaningful tokens. Some people will take it and bury it at the base of the tree. Anything that you would do at a regular indoor altar, you can do an outdoor altar. So if you want to, say we're talking about that manifestation oil, if you want to make it over there instead, you can use the ingredients that are already in that outdoor area and kind of substitute what you would usually use when you're working indoors. And that way it's become not only more special because you sourced it, but now it's regional. Now it's more potent. So I think that's kind of like the heart of witchcraft, right? Is using what's around, because way back when they weren't ordering, you know, whorehound from oh my gosh. Anyway, the herbal sides, the name has brain fart. They weren't just ordering whatever dried herbs the drop of a hat. They were using what was around them. So I think that's even more special. It's kind of going out, getting connected, acquainted with your area, and then bringing that back to your sacred space. And not only is it special because now you know what's around you, now you know what's available, but now you have this incredible space to return to that's free. And I know so much of witchcraft people find cost prohibitive, which is fair, because you see someone with like the coolest shit and you're like, oh man, I need that corkscrew shaped bottle, and I need snake skin and the latest, coolest, driest herbs. But that's just not the case. You can go outside, take some clover and substitute it for whatever you want, and it's free.
I love the idea of clover because it's such a in our part of the world, at least, it's such an easily accessible thing that's pretty much growing all over the place. And it already has that aspect of luck, which is very fun.
Yeah, it smells great. And it's used medicinally too. So like the more you go around and search, the more you're going to find like, oh, I recognize that plant. And the more you're going to want to learn about it, and the more you're going to know consequently. And then you're going to have this whole hoard of resources to you that you know you can use in scenarios. I mean, a whole bunch of different scenarios. So it's kind of like, if I could start my practice all over again, I actually don't think that I would have started with the amount of tools that I had. I think I would have just gone outside and tried to learn about my area first. And I would actually recommend that to everyone. Just go outside, see if you can identify 5 plants. And if you can't, go learn about it.
Yeah, because you don't want to be adding poison ivy to your manifestation oil, babe. Not a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you like really want it to stick around, right?
Ooh, yeah, I guess so. Or if you're like one of the lucky people who actually doesn't have an allergic reaction to poison ivy. So I don't want to leave you out of the conversation. It's cool if you want to add it to your oil. As Brittany said, your practice is your practice. You do you.
Yeah, that's actually, we found a whole bunch of poison plants around here that I'm probably going to like get pretty into soon, but there's definitely a ton of precautions with that. So, you know, hear ye, please just don't go running around sniffing Datura, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And if you do, I'm going to plug another podcast episode, because if you do want to learn about poisonous plants, I had Kobe on. I cannot remember what episode number. There's becoming too many episodes now where I can't remember everybody's episode number, but we did like a poisonous plants episode somewhere back. So scroll on back and find that if you're like, if this poisonous plant talk has piqued your interest at all. Okay, cool. So we have these sort of basics. Is there anything else that I'm missing here in my line of questioning?
I think at the end of the day, my best piece of advice ever would just be don't worry so much what everyone else thinks about your altar. Like, it's cool to have these aesthetic things, and it's cool to be able to go on Amazon and find the like your Lord of the Rings, my precious item to put on it. But I think at the end of the day, does your altar feel special to you? And if the answer is no, make it feel special to you. And that doesn't have to cost money. That can be going outside during the springtime, weaving together some dandelions, and then putting it on your altar. If
Yeah.
your altar does feel special to you and it doesn't look as big and grand as everyone else's altar, congratulations, you've built the best fucking altar ever because it's special for you. And that's all that matters. I think the only exception is when you're doing altar building for deities, is I think it's important that you merge them, but people get really caught up in the altar having to feel specifically like that deity that they forget that you're the one working with that deity. So it really should feel like the two of you had a beautiful love child. Like, it should feel like this give and take of, hey, I found this and I'm dedicating it to you because it reminded me of you. And you don't have to go online and Google if that was something significant. You saw it, you thought of them, that makes it special. And yeah, I mean, if you're working with Aphrodite, maybe we don't put, a ton of things that don't make sense for her there. Like, but if you're going out of your way to make something special, that is the offering. So it should feel like a beautiful love child, like I said. So don't get so caught up in having to make it feel like just that deity that you lose yourself because you've built it.
Totally. And I will say, I one of the most simple that I'm feeling like now is probably like a little form of an altar. I have this ruffle bowl that I got from a local, clay artist, and I am absolutely obsessed with it. It's like one of my favorite things that I own. And in the summer, like when spring comes around, and then when fall comes around, sort of at the changing of the seasons, like the big seasonal changes, the first It's usually the first acorn that catches my eye in the fall. And then, like, the first flower or like clover or just something that catches my eye in the spring, I'll pick up when I'm on my walk or something. And then I come back to the house and I put it in the ruffle bowl. And it feels like just a tiny little offering to, like, I don't know what, like to the earth or to the universe or something. And I feel like that's my tiny little baby beginner altar
Oh,
moment for sure.
that. It feels like that's something that's special to you because you walk by and you smile. So maybe you've been secretly building an altar just for you and you just didn't know. So, a
Oh my goodness, I'm a witch.
wedge.
Cool. Okay, well, I have one last question in terms of outdoor altars. Is there anything, even especially like if somebody's going to build it in their backyard or something, or in a public space as much as they feel like they can, is there anything that people should be doing to protect their outdoor altars in terms of like energies and stuff like that?
I would say no, because I think the earth kind of takes care of it. So at the end of the day, when we're like releasing and cleansing, we're using materials from the earth anyway. So I kind of think that it all evens out at the end. And then I would say don't get upset if you come back and your altar stuff is like knocked over or missing or something like that. Definitely don't put anything outdoors that you wouldn't want to risk losing. Like, don't take your grandmother's antique bracelet and string it on the tree, like a secret cool friendship bracelet. But, maybe use your less expensive materials like yarn, stuff that you're prepared to lose. But yeah, I don't feel the need to cleanse and do all that stuff because at the end of the day, I'm out there working with the earth. So I think it kind of knows what I need intuitively, but I know that's not everyone's belief. So if you feel like you need to cleanse it, get out there, do it, do the damn thing.
Cool. Love it. Yeah, I love the idea that Earth is taking care of that itself. I feel like that is one of Earth's biggest coolest thing it does. It like transmute, it breaks down, it cleans, it changes, like all that cool stuff. And I would also add as just like a thought in terms of like, I have just, when I've been driving around lately, I have seen so much trash. And I know this is kind of an aside, but so much trash, like plastic and paper and like just shit ton of trash. And so I would say if you are gonna do in your backyard, it maybe it matters less, but I would say if you're doing any sort of little tiny altar in a public place, maybe natural materials or like biodegradable materials that aren't plastic would be
Yes.
ideal for sure.
Yeah, 1,000,000,000%. You're absolutely right. Please do that. And salt. We talk about salt. Salt kills soil for up to 10 years. So much so that it's actually a war crime to like salt fields. So if you work with salt, consider switching to eggshells instead. They do the same thing and they do not kill the soil. So if ever you're working with salt, please don't bury it. Please don't sprinkle it onto the soil. We want that fertile soil around for years to come. It's not worth it. Switch to eggshells.
Wow, that is a good, really good tip for people to remember, especially maybe you have a garden and you're like, and salt is one of your big cleansing things. Yeah, wow, really good thing to remember. Cool. Brittany, thank you so much for being here. Any final tips, any sort of creative, fun little tips for our baby altar builders out there?
It look for fallen branches so you can start creating your tools. So if you want to make like a tiny besom to sweep that space with before you start working there, look for fallen twigs, look for materials that you could make one out of. Look for what's around you. That's safe. Like we're talking about, you're not going to want to make a poison ivy crown, but look for that stuff to make the tools. So, and then think of what makes you feel good. So, do you feel at your most powerful when you're wearing a flower crown? Do you feel your most powerful when you're sweeping? Do you feel your most powerful when you're creating a wand? Look for those materials around you.
Amazing. Brittany, thank you so, so much for coming on. I think this is your third episode with us, if I have that right. So yeah, we
Yeah.
appreciate you so much. And thank you so much for being here and walking us baby altar builders through our first altars.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun. I love being here.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you love the podcast, don't forget to rate and leave a review wherever you listen. Follow me on Instagram at Opening the Door Podcast and visit my website, openingthedoorpodcast.com, to explore my reading offerings, digital downloads, and more. Plus, subscribe to my email list to be the first to know about OTD news and offerings.